Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Adam Pacitti from Cultaholic.com, and here are your 10 favorite vague train-related gimmicks.
Right on, man.
McMannequin, the British Bulldog, is part of the new generation.
You may all bow before King Mabel.
Here comes the jackknife.
On lives the new generation and the World Wrestling Federation.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Review, as the other Cultaholic lads have one eye on the Olympics and the other eye on Monday Night Wrestling. We're here via the Ica Pro Power DeLorean, playing the Olympic event of running away from a wrestling company. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell. Alongside the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic does not need a pencil. If you gave him one, he'd throw it like a javelin at the Olympics, because he gets it right every time. He's Justin Henry, and he is off of America.
I'll tell you what event I gained new appreciation for from just watching it over the weekend.
Is it dressage?
Water polo.
Ooh. Yeah, there's been loads of fun stuff like that. I missed the water polo. Who won?
US won both their matches versus Japan, both men's and women's.
Nice.
It was, I appreciate it because you can't touch the bottom of the pool at any time. It's just pure back and forth, just fighting for that one shot. And it's just the stamina, the patience, the aggression you need to win at that. And that's a hell of a sport.
I like how there's lots of different sports this time round. Skateboarding's made a comeback, and everybody has seen now that clip of the man getting his pecker destroyed in the skateboarding.
And having his taters mashed.
if there was a Botchamania Olympics, that would be the first video that we would see. It's been fun though. I've actually, like, it's a weird dynamic. A lot of people have said how weird it is to watch the Olympics without fans there, but I think as wrestling fans, we're kind of callous to it a bit now, aren't we?
I think most sports fans should already be used to that. Basketball, football, baseball, whatever, the past year, we've gotten used to it.
But it's still been a good fun break from the rest of the world and all the things going on in it, as is a trip back to 1995.
This is fun.
Well, it's certainly distracting. It's a weapon of mass distraction, is the Cultaholic Classic Raw review. And we are back we're now in the summer of the new generation era of the WWF. It was its lowest performing year in history. It wasn't a great time to be in the back office of WWF, but some fun stories to come from it. Justin Henry is going to talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw in a moment. Where and when are we for this week, Justin?
Well, we have a live two-piece taping here. It is Monday, August 14th, 1995. We're at the auditorium in Worcester, Mass.
Worcester!
Worcester.
Worcester, as you call it over there. It's Worcester over here, but Worcester over there.
But the important thing is it's a hell of a steak sauce.
I'd also don't think it didn't go unnoticed, you sucker. Thank you for pronouncing Worcestershire right.
Well, we're good for some things.
We are, but you especially, you write that word down in front of people and it confuses a lot of people. So thank you for getting Worcestershire right. I appreciate it.
I do enjoy some Worcestershire.
Oh, you bellend. I was, I did a Twitch stream and I mentioned Worcestershire sauce and somebody in the thing wrote it phonetically saying, actually, it's Worcestershire. And I was like, are you going to tell somebody who lived down the road from Liam Perrins how to pronounce Worcestershire? Are you really? Are we really playing that game on Twitch today?
Why insulting Roy Shire's brother, Worcester?
Boy, you...
You're promoting San Francisco too.
You leave my family and my daughter out of this. So with brand spanking new tapings, with that comes a special energy. I'm looking forward to delving into this. But you know what, Justin? There has already been action before the first bell has sounded at these tapings, right? Because this is the tapings where Lex Luger has walked into Vince McMahon's office and gone, "I'm done, lads. See you later." Luger's handed his notice in.
Handed his notice in, but perhaps Vince didn't take him so seriously here.
We were going to see. From The Observer, Luger at the taping gave notice. Adam Bomb also gave notice at the taping. Boo. Apparently, he's been disappointed with his push and what he feels are unfulfilled promises. Me too, Adam. Me too. Don't know the situation with Luger, but Bomb was told on Monday to talk to Vince McMahon on Tuesday and try and get everything resolved. Last week, Sting made a play in the WCW offices to try and get Luger a job and was successful enough that they were at least strongly considering it. Supposedly with a caveat that Luger come in as a heel and immediately put over Hulk Hogan clean.
Well, there is a war story on the matter. It was the very first war story, in fact.
Mm-hmm. You have discussed this at length.
I may plug the fine job that Sam Driver did narrating that.
It's a beautiful job all round. Edited, beautifully written, wonderfully voiced. War stories. Was this season one, episode one, if memory serves?
Yes, this was patient zero here.
And
of the war stories brigade.
The show in question that Luger wandered onto in that episode of War Stories was WCW Monday Night Nitro. And I have some Nitro news for you this week as well. Dave says, after weeks of what appeared to be fruitless negotiations to bring in some of the top workers in the world for the premiere of the Nitro show, WCW appears to have reached agreements with Chris Benoit, Sabu, Dean Malenko, and are expected to reach an agreement this week with Eddie Guerrero, all of whom should be debuting in September or October.
Four for four. Not all of them.
Got them all. And they also talk about in The Observer a beautiful New Japan relationship being furthered with Monday Night Nitro, which will see Jushin Liger scheduled for the first ever episode of Nitro.
Correct.
Oh, do you know what? This is, for a wrestling fan reading this at the time, seeing like what Monday Night Raw was about, and then reading Nitro coming soon, Malenko, Benoit, Sabu, Liger. This must have been really exciting.
It kind of was, but as an ECW fan, when I watch a Guerrero and Malenko's final match a few weeks after this, and Joey Styles telling the crowd that this was their last night in the company, and the crowd chanting Bischoff sucks. Well, first of all, I was kind of confused because I didn't know Bischoff was that high of an executive. Like, I thought he was just an announcer with nice hair
with
and dimples.
Steps.
But turns out he was a vice president of the company, and he made the play to bring them all in.
And a play he did. And this is this first show at the Mall of America on September the 4th is looking like it could very well be the start of something magical. They held a press conference ahead of this. On this very day, on the day of this episode of Raw, there was a press conference held by WCW at the Harley Davidson Cafe in New York. This is where the WrestleMania press conference was held, just to really put the boot in. It was at this press conference it was announced that Steve McMichael is going to be making his debut on the broadcast table for WCW.
So you realize that this is the second time in 1995 that this building has had a press conference for a wrestling endeavor that has involved an NFL defensive star from the 1980s.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It's absolutely brilliant.
That is my new favorite statistic.
I'm just sad that Mongo wasn't hyped for the main event against Hogan. I'm just saying, we missed the boat on so many prospects. Adam Bomb and our boy Mongo being two of them.
Is Mongo going to attack Hogan like a pack of wild dogs?
And he's going to have him some fun.
I mean, he had Pepe.
I'm going to attack it like wild Pepe. And I'm going to have me some.
Release the hounds as Jericho sends out his tiny dogs after a drone.
I have a question for you, Justin Henry from Off of America.
Yes, sir.
At the moment in the wrestling world, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, very hotly rumored to be part of All Elite Wrestling very, very soon. People making comparisons to this particular era in wrestling How do you feel about that when people make the comparisons of like Brian and Punk joining AEW with the sort of movement that went on in WCW during what would become its biggest year?
I don't think it's too far off because I follow what goes on Squared Circle Reddit frequently, and like every other post is what if Punk was booked this way? What if Brian did that? Like, you've captured the imagination. And when you capture the imagination like that, then it's a sign you're doing something right, or at the very least, intriguing. And to me, this is the first time in a long time that we've had this kind of, especially in this sort of 1-2 punch, maybe since the Radicals jump ship, maybe since since the Invasion took place in 01, when everyone's imagination ran rampant and they did nothing with it.
It certainly does feel like that kind of you don't get that feeling of true invasion, despite the fact that, you know, the Forbidden Door's been flying back and forth in AEW. This truly feels like some kind of invasion type thing, expecting CM Punk to walk out and go, so this is the cult of personality. Look at the adjective cult. We're expecting it any minute now to be a thing. But it's interesting that, you know, you can draw comparisons between the two.
I'm just hoping they put him back with Gallows and Serena and reform the Straight Edge Society.
Oh, you could! Do it, you cowards! Do it, Serena, you cowards!
Serena, we need you to shave your head again. Gallows, we need you to regrow your hair and then shave it again.
I've only just grown it back. One more bit of news. It's quite light on the wrestling news, but I'll have a few other notes as we go through the show today. Lord Alfred Hayes was at WCW headquarters trying to get a job this week.
How did they pass on him?
How did you pass on Lord Alfred Hayes?
They brought in the Yeti, but wouldn't hire Lord Alfred Hayes.
This is it. Like, their standards are relatively low. They could have brought in Alfred Hayes.
He could have been the Yeti.
I'm coming for you, Hogan.
Is it? It's a little mummy that goes, my word.
Alfred Hayes could have been the Taskmaster.
No, he could have been the Yeti, I insist.
John! Thanks, John. Love you, John. let us go over to Justin Henry. He is going to guide us through quite a historical, in some places, episode of Monday Night Raw. Go for it, Justin.
Well, near as I can tell, there are no eloquent mummies on this show.
Oh,
we start off with a Sean promo video because tonight he's facing Jerry Lawler. We had some hype and overdrive here. From Vince doing the voiceover. Vince wants Sean to be the biggest thing in the world, and you could tell from the rasp in his voice. But Vince has to build drama also, because, see, last week Mabel posted Michaels by running him back first into the steel ring post. And Vince is acting like that this could be a career-ending thing for Sean. With Sean, you have not seen a career-ending injury yet. He'll come up with several, don't worry.
Vince really tends to lay it on thick, doesn't he, for the people he's trying to get over. And I honestly don't know a lot of the time if you need to.
It does reek of desperation sometimes.
It does.
Like, he's beating you over the head with the plot. I think it was Scott Keith used to say the sledgehammer of plot.
He would do it forever. Sorry, go on. I interrupted you.
That's a good, just hammering at home is my point, but go ahead.
I was going to say, because like you even have something simple like... Like, here's two examples in the future times of Rock versus Hogan, which is fine. You just go, Rock versus Hogan. There's the thing. No. You had to have Hogan hit the Rock with a truck. Like, you had Brett versus Vince. Fine. There's a story there for WrestleMania. No, you have to have Brett get hit with a car. Like, you don't need those extra bits. You know, it's like putting a spoonful of sugar into Coke. You know, it's already sweet enough. You don't need any more.
You don't want to snort sugar, that'll burn.
Exactly. Look what happened to Al Capone. Al Pacino, sorry. I mean, I'm sure Al Capone did it too.
I mean, yeah, they had Coke and Capone today, but who knows?
Did you just say Coca Capone?
Yes. At the Coca Cabona. the hottest house by north of Chicago. Anyway, to a point about that, it feels like WWF has to do something every single week for the storylines that they truly care about. You notice with AEW, like going back, 8 months, Sammy Guevara and MJF have hated each other. And they wouldn't address it every single week. There'd be other side angles. Every now and then, there'd be a new wrinkle, like Sammy recording MJF's BS to the, you know, his lie to the Pinnacle or whatever. And there'd be something new coming along, but it wouldn't be every single week. And by the time you get to the match, you've hyped the match up, but you didn't have to run it into the ground every week. You let it breathe.
You've drip fed it enough that people want it, and it still feels fresh rather than every single week having to pile on more story. And this is the beauty of having a bigger roster, that you can rest those guys. You can have them take a back seat so you can let the audience miss them. When WWE had its biggest roster, you could have done that. But instead, they just ran with the same 20-odd guys all the time. And that was the problem.
Right now, Raw has like 30 or 40 talents that you could be using every single week. But you get rematch. While people like, I don't want to say Umberto because I know he's been almost Sheamus, but he was absent for a while. Ricochet was absent for a while. They were just sitting and catering, as the modern cliche goes. It's the same old every single week. I mean, this coming week right now for AEW, we have Santana and Ortiz versus FTR. That's been building since, what, March, April?
And that's just main event. The match. And it'll be amazing.
Yeah. But what we're watching with these roles, this is actually fine in a sense because they don't address everything every single week. Stuff has time to breathe. Brett and Hakushi's blow-off was, what, 4 months after the feud started? Mm-hmm. And they didn't run into the ground every week. That's fine. I like that. That's fine. I could live with that.
I think the blessing is the fact that they're doing these blocks of taping, so they can only really tell that story so many times on a night without burning the crowd out.
And you only have an hour a week.
That helps as well. That very much helps. A 43-minute episode of Raw is just beautiful.
Instead of 3 hours of, all right, let's do Damian Priest versus John Morrison again. It's a 26 week in a row. All right, but we'll do like a 4 out of 7 falls match. That'll be different. So tonight it's Shawn versus Lawler. Lawler gets a little drop in promo. Says he's going to finish what Mabel started. All right. Tonight it's Vince and DiBiase on the call because Lawler has to work. DiBiase informs us that Sid is still mad about getting taken out of the IC title match at SummerSlam. Clearly, Sid is not an observer reader.
He was never great at this commentary thing, was he, Ted?
Never. I was referring to Sid as being not an observer reader. But DiBiase was... his skill as a wrestler didn't carry over to announcing well enough. But he was fine.
But I think when you get someone like we whinge about him on the regular, but Jerry Lawler, when he's on and when he's in the right place, he is very, very good.
Oh, he's definitely a better announcer than DiBiase, but I'll say this. I like Ted a lot better than the guy we're getting coming up.
I don't know who you mean, baby.
You will hug DiBiase and you will tell him you love him.
Incidentally, Vince mixing it up this week. He threw me off guard straight away when he gave us a big, welcome, everybody! What are you doing? What are you messing with success for?
Well, you got to change it up a little bit because it's competition coming.
That's Vince's solution. I'll start with body instead of one.
It's a sacrifice he made. Times are tight, man. Times are tight.
Yeah, exactly.
So now we come to my favorite bad squash match ever for reasons that will soon become clear. Waylon Mercy versus Doink the Clown. I forgot Doink still worked here.
I think Vince forgot that Doink still worked here. Last time we heard about Doink, he was on some of the B house shows. Like, they're proper phasing him out.
Well, there's no Dink here, which is a sign of the times that the act is coming to an end. Vince tells us that Doink is Anna Nicole Smith's favorite WWF superstar. Like, Is Doink like Filthy Rich?
I was going to ask you to maybe put some meat on the bone of this one because I wasn't sure what this was about.
Well, this is the big controversy where Anna Nicole Smith's husband died. And when I say husband, I mean 80-year-old oil financier, oil tycoon.
She loved him, damn it.
J. Paul Getty, I think his name was. It wasn't J. Paul Getty. That was a friggin' J. Howard Marshall, I think it was. J. Paul Getty, I'm an idiot.
No, you're thinking of the man that owns all the copyrighted pictures.
Yes, that's a... I got my J's mixed up. It's J. Paul Howard, who... I'm looking at a photo. He looked like a wax statue of Don Rickles.
That's slightly melted.
Yes, it was like, she loved him for sure. I will say, it did lead to one of my favorite galling things I've ever seen in my life. I would never like look forward to watching the Anna Nicole Smith show on the E Network when it was like 2002, 3, something like that.
Right.
But I had the TV on one night. I was watching it. The opening credits are animated, and they depict his death and her weeping over his casket.
No.
I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
That was a slack jaw on my part. Like, no, they didn't.
That's terrible.
As much as in the edgelord humor as I was at that point in my life, even I'm like, no, that's too much. They didn't do that.
Jeez, that's a slap in the face if there ever was one.
No, she was sad, but then she got his money, and then she was happy again.
She was happy. Cock-a-hoop, they say.
So I'm thinking, so Dwight must be like an 80-year-old billionaire or something, which is why he's Anna Nicole's favorite wrestler.
Or about to die.
Well, based on what happened in this match, certainly. Yeah. So Mercy comes out and gets a big pop from the partisan Massachusetts crowd.
There is a lot of love for Waylon Mercy, isn't it? When you just hear that, lives are going to be you and Wayne Merles and Zanes. You do hear a little pop, don't you?
You do. And you know what? I think I just figured out why I love this match. This is Bray Wyatt beating up The Fiend.
I think you might. There is a parallel. There is a parallel.
Most certainly is. And... So Mercy comes out, he goes for the insincere handshake. Doink won't do it. Gives him this lame take a hike gesture. And this is followed by, admittedly, some really crappy arm drags from Doink. Although, to be fair, Mercy can't really bump that well anymore. He's 43 and his body's failing him.
Yeah, he's not in the best of condition here. But he can wrestle to hide that on some occasions. He has been able to wrestle to hide how limited he is.
He needs someone to bump for him.
Yeah.
He's getting more immovable, unfortunately. We get a funny spot where Mercy's on the apron, and Dwayne tries to fly at him, so Mercy just sidesteps, and Dwayne flies right through the ropes. We get the bottom rope trick, where Dwayne tries to crawl back in, and Mercy pulls the rope up for him and then just drops it on his back, which I love.
So good. I've not seen it before or since, Wade and Mercy.
Crowd cheered that.
They like him. They like him more than Doink, basically. <Wow. laughs>
It's at this point that I noticed that in the front row, there were a lot of people wearing WAAF t-shirts, probably for like they were sponsored by the radio station.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because it is a radio station in the local area. And I can almost imagine they did like a big giveaway on the night of like, hey, win tickets to the WWF, the hottest ticket in town. Call, be the 15th caller and say, I listen to WAAF.
That was the eventual home of Opie and Anthony, and they had their own syndicated show, I think, in 96 on WAAF, and it was so bad that they would play the old bits on the air and let the staff goof on them for just how bad they came off.
Oh, but they still the test of time, though, regardless.
Well, O&A, well, the show did, the friendship, not so much. Mm-hmm. So Mercy just keeps beating Doink down, puts Doink in the sleeper. You would swear that Linda just got out of the wheelchair. Based on the pop the crowd gave from Mercy playing Doink in the sleeper hold.
It's beautiful. This is a crowd that is ready to be done with Doink the Clown, I think, more as well as ready to embrace Waylon Mercy.
Did you hear what they were chanting?
No. I couldn't make it out.
Kill the Clown.
Oh, that makes sense now. I thought it might be
Kill the Clown.
They're Mercy's- not having it.
Tim Murphy's got him in the coquina clutch here. He's Samoa Merce. He's throttling Doink. Doink does a great selling job here, balling his fist up, trying to fight back, but then he's just a slow fade out. He's out. Mercy wins. Crowd's happy. That was not a good match, but the spectacle was awesome.
It felt like Waylon Mercy just... And this could potentially, and this is my thought off this, was two thoughts. The crowd being very pro-Mercy, very anti-Doink, put me in mind of Rock Goldberg from Backlash 03, which was, funnily enough, in Worcester, where the crowd were cheering The Rock near the end and booing Goldberg.
It was also the same state where Foley won his first world title.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? They were on the right side that night. They were cheering the right people that night, mainly.
Well, by the way, you know you're watching Bad New Generation, as you also point out here, when the opposite of Mercy is Doink. Mercy's a good thing. Show me some mercy. No, we'll give you Doink instead.
But this could have potentially opened up a whole new thing for Waylon Mercy. I love the idea of him kind of becoming the WWF's resident gimmick killer. So he goes after these outlandish gimmicks and just chokes them all out.
It's like Jason Voorhees and this is Crystal Lake.
Yes. That to me is very intriguing. Just go after all the outlandish characters in wrestling. Start with Doink.
Mm-hmm. Lives are going to be in Jason Voorhees' hands. They're the same ring, so you need to shh, 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 shh. So, if you're worried about losing your face painted wrestler quota here, don't worry because our next segment is going to build that back up.
Oh, one thing we have to mention before we leave Doink and Waylon's match. Throughout this match, there's some conversation between Vince and Ted that is prevalent. Oh, yes,
you're correct.
Vince is plugging a match for Henry O. Godwin later on, saying, oh, he's now in the Million Dollar Corporation, isn't he? And Ted is very, very aggressively distancing himself from Henry O. Godwin, saying correct. That he literally hired him to do a job, dirty job for a dirty man, just a dirty pig farmer. Like, really going to town and calling him BLT Breath at one point. Like, really, like, digging on Henry O. Godwin on a live microphone on a wrestling show. Just pop that there, pop that there.
Yeah. Yes, you guys, you make it clear that Henry Godwin is just a mercenary, not an actual paid soldier. Or not a fully hired soldier, I guess.
Which I'm quite relieved about, because I genuinely thought for a while Ted had hired Henry O. Godwin for the Million Dollar Corporation, and my opinion on Ted's choices for this corporation that had deep pockets was disappointing. If you're hiring a pig farmer, turned out he hadn't. He'd hired him as like on a freelance deal to come and do a little bit of dirty work and then bugger off again.
God, DiBiase makes worse personnel decisions than like the New York Knicks. And there's never been no more exciting phrase at the NBA draft than the Knicks are on the clock. Because the draft's always held in New York City. They have very vocal fans. And at that point, anything could happen. And it has.
Were they just like sort of impulse buy or impulse move?
No, it's just poor decisions made. And the crowd there just boos the living hell out of whatever they do. Poor Spike Lee there. It's Knicks season ticket holder. And he just kind of throws his hand here like, what are we doing? It's like an annual inevitability. Although in recent years, they've actually done a little bit better draft-wise. But if you ever want to laugh, even if you know nothing about football, go on YouTube and look up New York Jets draft blunders. There's a whole reel from like the 80s and 90s of them making poor draft decisions. Ooh. And the crowd just like reacting like angrily. It's tremendous.
Oh, the joy of being a Knicks fan.
Or a Jets fan.
Or a Jets fan, sorry.
And that's good. It's both. It's both. Because I wish there was a Knicks draft blunder video out there, because I would just kick back through my feet and just watch it. The time director Ronaldo Balkman, and the crowd's just like, what the hell do we just do?
No, but the internet surely is a deep place. There must be one somewhere.
There's got to be one.
Yeah, it's got to be. There's got to be.
But why talk about sports-related misfortunes when we could discuss one of the most transcendent gimmicks of all time in its first physical form? This was the first ever visual vignette for Dustin Rhodes as Gold Dust. He's in front of a green screen, in front of some studio, which has the Tiny Toons logo on the outside of it.
I loved that. That completely took me out of it. Just seeing, and it kind of dates it as well, because Tiny Toon Adventures was big on TV at this point.
Definitely early 90s thing. That was one of my jams.
And just to see that logo as Goldust is doing his thing, it's very appealing.
Now, Goldust's face paint at this point was very basic. It was just, he had the gold face, just like a little bit of black mascara. Just a little bit, like eyeliner. Not a whole lot to it. He looks like a combination of an Oscar statue and a raccoon at this point.
Yeah. Because that was it. I'm glad you mentioned it. It's the eyeliner, because I was looking at this first incarnation, this first draft of this dress rehearsal of Goldust. I was like, it doesn't quite look like Goldust, and I can't put my finger on why. And it is this, it's a very subtle paint on the face. It's subtle. It's all gold, but like some black eyeliner and very little else going on. So it's like, yeah, like you said, like a trophy almost.
Yeah. Well, I think it was always supposed to resemble like an Oscar statue with a golden outfit.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of the point of it. But yeah, then not as elaborate from makeup quite yet. He lists off a slew of classic Hollywood stars. It says Goldust, says the legend of Goldust is different. He's doing the whispery tones, the sort of breathing at you as he says every word. And at some points, you can't quite hear what he's saying. It's so low in the mix. So that was like the one downside to this. He does say the phrase, celluloid gods and goddesses. A lot of whispering. I was born to be a star. Oscar, step aside. I'm going to manage men on a mission. No, he didn't say that part. He's running to the trophy. I wish that's what he meant, though.
Yeah! 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 Yeah!
As I've said for years about Goldust, this version of Goldust, he felt like a classic Batman villain.
Yeah, and now do you know what? I thought of this because I'm pretty sure you said this the other week about Goldust, about being like a Batman villain. I feel that sparked a little thing in my brain when you said that just then, and I'm thinking, yeah, it does. There is something like I do feel like he's about to rob a bank and leave like a gold calling card for Adam West to find.
Literal gold dust he just throws into the air.
He's left some gold dust behind. What could this mean, Robin?
Must be the penguin.
It must be.
Wah, wah, wah.
Shit, Batman. Just can't say.
Hit the one in the middle, Rocky. No, wrong roll. Oh, sorry.
Did anybody hear that penguin noise? It must be the Riddler. Catwoman, we meet again. Crap, Batman.
Adam West with a head injury.
Hey, I tell you what, I didn't know about this Goldust day, but immediately sizes up Diesel. Immediately goes to the main event. I had no idea that his vision of grandeur was to feud with Diesel. Was that looking like, was that going to be a thing at some point?
No, because I will say on future vignettes, he name drops other people, like Taker and Shawn. He's just calling everybody out.
Ah, fair enough. I thought he was just going straight for Diesel. I was like, okay, answer me this, Justin. So you were watching this. You watched this this Raw in situ at the time. What did you make of this reboot of Dustin Rhodes?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was just going to say that at this point, I didn't even know this was Dustin Rhodes. I knew who he was. I watched him many times over the years, but I never really heard Dustin talk all that much, because he was more just a straightforward wrestler. So to hear him talk like this, with a wig on, I would have never guessed at age 11 that this was Dustin. It wasn't until friggin' October when my brother bought the PWI 500 at the drugstore. They found Dustin Rhodes' entry in there, and it says now playing Goldust in WWE. I'm like, what?
What?
Yeah, it was like just blew my mind.
Do you know what Dave Meltzer thought of it?
He trashed it, didn't he?
Here's what Dave says in The Observer. Rhodes debuted doing a transvestite gimmick on the Raw show.
Oh boy.
Kind of doing a Marilyn Monroe look with lipstick, makeup, the feminine voice, etc. That's a feminine voice, apparently. That I wonder who Dave's met. I think Dave went to the wrong part of town one night. All the right, depending on your preference. Dave goes on to say, this gimmick could very conceivably be a career killer. It was well produced, but that's about all good I can say about it.
Dave was right about one thing there, and just one thing only. Right. That this could have been a career killer.
Yeah. That's
but Dustin was so good in this role. And there are deficiencies. His match style does suck for a while, where he does the slow stalking and it's just this glacial pace of the matches. For a while, his matches aren't great. But this gimmick is so memorable, and he did such a good job with it, with what he had to do and what he had to be, that he worked for years to get out of his father's shadow. And getting out of the shadow of the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, that's a tall order. So, but he became something completely unique away from the Rhodes name. That he's now a legend unto himself.
I know at this point, Dusty and Dustin were estranged.
Yes.
And I remember in an interview where Dusty talked about the first time he saw this, and he was very concerned for his son in the wrestling industry because he thought this was a joke. He thought this was a Vince rib. And you know what? Dusty's been there. Because Dusty was in the WWF and they went, put him in polka dots. So Dusty, who isn't having that conversation with his son on the regular, is probably seeing history repeat itself. A Rhodes family goes to the WWF and is put in a, as Dave Meltzer calls it, conceivably career-killing gimmick.
Well, and as you'll see over the months ahead, Dustin does some stuff with this character that's really questionable in his feuds with Razor and Piper, and it's going to...
It's going to push the envelope, isn't it? That's the word you're looking for. It's going to push the envelope.
And it's not the most sensitive audience to be doing it in front of.
No. It's a risk. It's a risk, actually. It's a risk that WWF is taking with
Absolutely.
This character for, you know, a company that is struggling to retain an audience and to retain money, to put a character out there that is so gregarious and so against the grain in an era where that kind of persona wouldn't have been as embraced as he would now. That is a bold move by the WWF.
Well, we know how this is going to end up going, but without the benefit of the time and knowing how this was going to go, I got to say this much about this vignette. Dustin did not half-ass it.
Oh, he went for it. And I adore him for it. One thing you cannot accuse Dustin Rhodes of half-hearting the Goldust character. You cannot accuse him. He just throws himself into it constantly.
He embodied the spirit of what he thought it was supposed to be. Now, later on, we'll see Dean Douglas vignette and the Shane Douglas's credit. It was hard to get into what they wanted him to be. But my God, that's night and day when you compare characters. Dean Douglas, who the hell could possibly care? Goldust, what is this guy supposed to be? I'm intrigued.
We're very sold on this character.
There's just enough ambiguity here and strangeness that you're spellbound by it.
If you're channel surfing in 1995 and you see that character, that setup, that look, you're going to stop. So maybe that's what they were going for.
So to this point, I'm in a pretty good headspace with this show.
Yeah.
Mercy kills Doink. It's got a great Goldust vignette. It's not perfect because the audio quality was low because he did whisper a little bit. You couldn't really hear what he was saying. Very low talking. And then we get this next bit.
Okay.
Vincent DiBiase, you're talking at ringside. DiBiase probably remember like, hey, I beat him up in the front row of a Saturday Night's main event once. For sending him and his father packing. When all of a sudden, out walks Hogg with no music. Oh, boy. he confronts DiBiase. He's pissed because DiBiase talked about how he's not a real corporation member. He's just a hired gun, nothing more. DiBiase tries to reason with him. I realize I'm watching Kenny Powers yell at Hans Gruber. Look at him. Tell me you don't see it.
No, I saw the Hans Gruber thing in Ted when you told me about it about a month ago. The Powers one's new to me, and yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
He should have the MVP character, Henry Godwin. He could have done the whole Kenny Powers bit years ahead of time. I don't remember his funniest Danny McBride, but he could have tried. So Gruber tries to reason with Powers. Powers starts to throw a bucket of slop on him.
After a lot of stalling.
Hans Gruber begs from his knees. Powers wants him to squeal, and then yippee-ki-yay, throw a slop on him. See, I just made the angle better.
You made it feel much better. I mean, did you not like the slopping of Hans Gruber then?
I imagine that would have been the ending of Die Hard if WWE Films made it.
Fair. I just think Ted DiBiase is the biggest idiot millionaire I've ever known. Like he built his roster.
Went to space recently.
I mean, yeah, there's been competition since. Oh, well done to every Amazon worker who helped get Jeff Bezos into space for 11 minutes.
And recycle those bottles.
Good lads and lasses. But with Ted DiBiase, massive idiot, because he's got almost, you know, an unlimited amount of funds, yet he goes shopping at the bargain bin for a stable. He gets someone like Henry Godwin on a freelance basis, but he could have easily got anybody better. And then he's a freelance farmer. He's basically a freelance farmer.
Shows up one day to tend the fields, and then that's it.
Well, that's it. You've got to book him for a week.
We need to plow for a week. Can you do that?
And then he just trashes him on a live mic on a live commentary on the live commentary of a wrestling show. Like, and then tries to go, "Oh, hey, mate, oh, you all right?" Like, what are you hoping, that he's just not watching the show?
Well, you've seen the ratings at this point in 95. It was about a 50-50 shot, to be honest.
That's true.
But you realize that, just to keep it canonical here, DiBiase is a complete idiot, but he outsmarts Cameron Grimes every week. True. So how smart is Cameron Grimes?
I think Grimes is therefore near the top of the most intelligent millionaires.
So Burns made him the head B guy. Let's get in the way. Oh, we did bad. I know when I make a Simpsons reference, I can always crack Tom.
I just like how beautifully Simpsons sits alongside wrestling so often.
John, I want Cameron Grimes to be the head B guy. Remember, goes to college season 5. He didn't know how to find it.
He's there. some hog news before we go any further from the Observer.
Ooh.
I thought you'd be happy. Hog news. Da 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 da. pig, etc. According to David Meltzer, Henry Godwin suffered a sprained ankle playing softball 2 days before this. His match at Madison Square Garden with Adam Bomb turned into a 28-second win for Godwin, which has compounded Adam Bomb's frustration in the company. And it does play into the physicality of a match later on tonight featuring Henry Godwin.
That isn't the first time that softball season has played a role in changing WWE's booking.
Why is it softball that just seems to keep knackering everybody?
but between Sid preferring to play over wrestling and that's a future true story of how Adam Bomb's career changed with a game of softball.
There you go. There's a counted out there. Adam Bomb leaving the company.
You see, he should go to AEW and be Tony Khan's bodyguard. And see, that way, when Tony Khan dispatches him to attack somebody, it's the wrath of Khan.
Oh! That'll do. Good night, everybody. That's the show.
Well, no, I would hope not, because this next match we have to discuss.
Oh, we certainly do. We certainly do. We've been doing so well, and I can't. Right, we'll get into the match. I'll shut the F up, because I want to ask about this team.
Yeah, well, first, I mentioned that Doc Hendricks replaces Ted DiBiase. Well, it's Michael Hayes and a previous and a bad name.
Baby.
I miss DiBiase already.
That's, I always learn from the Boy Scouts to always be. Oh, I can't remember. Oh, Doc.
That was funny. I'll give him that. That was funny.
Did you really dislike Doc Hendricks in this role?
He wasn't bad. It was just the voice grates on you after a while.
He's a lot, isn't he?
He is. It's a lot to take on. There's some commentators who are like that, where it's just, you know, they're informative. They know what they're talking about. They're good for what the product is, but god damn, they need to take elocution lessons or something.
Yes, they do. He is a lot.
Well, we'll be hearing a lot of him at SummerSlam, so get ready. So this next match is
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm not sure how to even describe what happened in this match. Well, just the opponents. The Smoking Guns are here for a squash. Their opponents are named Bill Garrett and Cody Wade. Now, that's two common enough names, and nothing special about that. Well, first off, they have mullets. Well, that's really nothing. 1995. Although one is built like a hybrid of Dr. Death and Jeff Cobb. That being Bill Garrett.
Yeah.
He's a tank. Or more accurately, he's a train.
They're both trains, I think.
They have train-themed singlets. Bill Garrett's, the stockier one, says engine on it. Cody Wade's singlet says caboose. I'm just... Okay, they're like, are they the gravy train? Are they the victory train?
I've called them in my notes the train gang.
That's simple enough. Come on, ride the train. Or the Quad City DJs.
Or Thomas the Wank Engine. I can't tell. I can't decide which.
Oh, God.
This is so weird because I can't find anything.
They have a gimmick.
They have a gimmick, and they are train people. They're not trains. Although, if they came out as trains, that's money. They don't work on the trains. They just have train attire, and one has engine, one has caboose, and there's just like this. There's a very deliberate design that doesn't mean anything.
They called the custom gear guy and had matching outfits made with different words. We learned during this match it's going to be Smoking Guns versus Eli and Jacob Blue at SummerSlam, because apparently they were having good matches at house shows and they wanted to reward that.
I'd rather see, once again, Smoking Guns versus the Train Gang at the SummerSlam. I would rather that, please.
They should have built to that match.
They should have done.
Turns Turns out this is an awkward hip toss night because this match begins with a few of them.
Oh, God. Old, is it Garrett's the Garrett's the beefy boy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Garrett is, it's like, Garrett takes a hip toss. Like, it's like when you try and lift a shopping bag that's a bit too heavy over your shoulder. But you miscalculate how much energy to get it over, and it flies the other end, and it ends up on the floor again. It was like just a big wet bag of groceries in the floor.
When I say Garrett's built like Jeff Cobb, I'm not exaggerating.
Corn
it's like
the
same dimensions. He's like if he's 6 foot tall, then he's maybe 315 pounds, and he's just very oddly shaped. Like so Cody Wade tags in. He's the caboose half of the team. He turns to Billy Gunn and proceeds to jiggle his butt cheeks at him using his hands because he's the caboose, you see.
To which Billy Gunn went, a gimmick based on your bottom, hey?
Yes, the light bulb went above his head at that point. You realize this was a seminal match in WWF history. We didn't even know. We had no idea what we were up against coming into this.
Billy Gunn backstage. So your gimmick is that you like your bum. Yeah.
The Guns have had enough of this crap, and they just take Cody Wade and finish him with a sidewinder quickly. And that was the whole match. And I'm just...
Can I mention from this match, Bill Garrett, when he... when he was in the match, at one point, I think it's Billy Gunn, he swings for him. Garrett does this dive out of the way where it looks like somebody turns gravity on in a different direction, because he just kind of goes flying off to the one side of the ring in a really weird, like he's been pulled that way by magnets, and then he lands and tags in Caboose.
And the Caboose Wade.
The rest is history. But if you watch any part of this match, Garrett's dive for the hot tag is so weird. It's like just gravity breaks for a moment, like the physics in GTA 5 just break for a moment.
He's Ryan Nope. This match there was a lot to take in here.
Jeff can't.
The most normal person in this match is Bart Gunn.
That's a worry, isn't it? When Bart is the most average.
We go to the report card segment, and I'm hoping that Dean grades Garrett and Wade's outfits.
T for train.
Unfortunately, he goes in a different direction.
Different look for old Dean this week.
Yeah, he inherited IRS's suspenders because only one guy could have suspenders at a time.
IRS now gone, by the way. A little bit of wrestling news. Since IRS has now left, Tony Garea has his job back as road agent. I do hope he'll sub himself in for matches on the house show circuit when someone doesn't turn up.
Well, he's only like 50-something at this point.
He's fine. He's a spring chicken. Get in there, Tony.
It's like in the NFL when they have a 53-man roster and they have to, like, somebody gets hurt, so you got to bring somebody up, and they bring the guy up, and you see, like, a guy gets cut and released, like 10 times during a season. He's the 53rd man. And it's like, Tony Garea is the 53rd man. It's like, oh, we're gonna bring in Alex Wright. All right, Garea's gone. Oh, comma quit. All right, bring Garea back.
Who's just, the 53rd man?
I don't think Marty Jannetty was hired and fired as many times as some football players. So this first report card with suspender-wearing Douglas. The word is execution. And we're going to talk about Bret Hart. For some reason, he calls Bret a coward for going to the middle rope, because his opponent is prone while Bret gets a higher position of leverage, I guess. Then he criticizes Bret for not hooking the leg. What is he, Groom? He tells somewhere like a freaking Gorilla Monsoon is smiling and nodding at this gimmick.
I think Gorilla wrote this script.
And then he goes and admonishes the referee, Tim White, for not counting the three. So basically, this actually makes sense. He's criticizing him for his poor wrestling acumen. And he's making some valid points here, except for the top middle rope thing.
The best wrestlers are the heels that are telling the truth.
Yeah. And then he gives Bret an F for 4 out of 10. He gives him an F for foundation of failure. Oh, the alliteration.
Do you reckon the mention of Foundation was a happy coincidence?
It couldn't have been a coincidence.
I hope so. I hope it was.
In wrestling, there are no coincidences.
You think that he had Caboose on his bottom without any need for a train gimmick? That is not a coincidence. Caboose.
I hope they come back.
Mate, I'm gutted because according to every single website that I went to, and believe me, I went to a lot in this hour, I can't find any other match that they've done.
So you're saying they're like a one-time divine godsend?
This just, I feel like they just burst into existence and have just gone again like that. I feel like they were a variant that was captured on television and then snubbed out.
It's like a phenomenon.
Yeah. I don't even know whether we've seen them. Maybe it was an optical illusion.
Maybe you'll watch this show after us and go, what the hell are they even talking about? It was Smoking Guns versus Hardy and Gil. Yeah. I mean, you saw it and I saw it, so I know. At least I'm kind of not nuts.
I think we did. I think I definitely saw two men with a train gimmick, but wasn't a train gimmick.
I look forward to that future Desert Island Grab Tree of flying these two.
Mate, I would do. Oh, I would love that. I want it. Right. On the unlikely event that Bill Garrett or Cody Wade or friends or family of them listen to this nonsense, please, please reach out. I want to talk to them. I need to know more. I want to know the origin of this gimmick, what they were hoping to do, what could have been. I want to know it all. I want to know it all. Please get in touch. Well, thank you.
I can only assume that they're both New England guys since they're local talents.
Yeah.
So I can only assume that Age Train, who's from Massachusetts, was actually a tribute to these two.
maybe as a kid he watched them and went, when I grow up, I want a vague train wrestling gimmick.
Pretty sure Adrian was an adult by this point.
he was 10, but still as hairy.
And he was 6'7".
He was hanging out with his brother, Ice.
Woo-woo!
I'm Adam Pacitti from Cultaholic.com, and here are your 10 favorite vague train-related gimmicks.
Braun Strowman.
Cody Wade, Bill Garrett. A train, Ice Train,
the Dixie Train,
the Tamina Train,
Tamina Train.
Thank you, Ross. A Train, Ice Train. Okay, we've got seven. We've got seven vague train-related gimmicks. There must be more.
Trainer from the WWF Attitude, the video game.
A trainer.
That counts.
Yeah, we'll stick him in. Black Train, Gold
Dust. The Ho Train!
Yes, Godfather's Ho Train. Rock and Roll Express. Orient Express.
Midnight Express. There's got to be something.
That's 10.
Fine. All the Express teams.
All the Express teams. Yes, there is at least 10. At least 10. There is an indie team in the UK called the Rock and Coal Express. They count as well. 10. There's at least 10. At least 10 vague train gimmicks in wrestling. Amazing. What a day.
What is this show?
It's a podcast, or Raw.
It's...
I'll tell you what this show is, Justin. It's free.
That's true.
If you were paying for this, you can complain. You have no room to complain if you listen to this. It's free.
We go to the arena where Sean cuts a promo from backstage on the video wall. They play it live so they can hear the crowd reaction, and they do cheer for him.
Yeah.
Calls Lawler Kingfish, calls Mabel Humpty Dumpty, does the whole All the King's Horses spiel, and ends with Andrew Dice Clay's, ooh!
I don't think so. This is good, Sean. This is Sean and good
Dickory,
form.
Dickory, die. No, Sean can't do that in front of this crowd.
Sean in good form here.
Yeah, Sean's definitely not his best stuff because smarmy heel Sean's better than, ain't I a stinker baby face Sean?
Yeah.
Which is what it is.
It's true. It's better as he'll always be better as a heel in this particular era than a face. But I think he's doing his thing well. I think he's very much the company are desperate for somebody they can get people behind, and I think Sean's going to be that guy. I think Vince knows it now as well.
Yeah, it was actually the week before this that Vince. Week before this that Vince called Brett to tell him he was getting the belt with Survivor Series from Diesel and asked him if he had any problem losing to Sean at WrestleMania. So that plan's already in motion.
So he already knows. He knows that Sean's the way forward. Sean is the future.
Next week is Taker versus the Tonka in an attempt to sell more Royal Rumble video games from 2 years earlier.
Apparently, this match far better than it should have been.
Well, I'll be the judge of that.
That's what Dave says. We'll find out next week, though.
Wait, how would he know? He flew to Massachusetts for this?
apparently he did. Apparently he did.
I went to a Patriots preseason game. It's not regular season because it's still August, which means the regular season doesn't begin until September. Yeah, September.
I've had a really tough week. I knew about CM Punk and Daniel Bryan ages ago, long before you. So shut up.
CM Punk at this point, I think, is still in high school. But yeah, I know one day he's gonna go to this company run by this son of an automotive billionaire who's still in school himself.
I really feel for Dave this week. I really feel for Dave this week. I feel like Dave Meltzer's become a bit unraveled this week. Just because the CM Punk Daniel Bryan stuff has come from other sources, and then I just in the Observer where Dave was going, yeah, well, we knew this was happening anyway. Like, Dave, it's all right for someone else to get it before you. It's good, man. You're good. No, Brian, I knew
he
already.
People all the time. He credits people all the time.
He does. But it was just, I enjoyed the wording that he used. It was like, yeah, we've known about it for ages. Okay, it's cool, mate. It's cool. It's all good. God love that. God love and God preserve Dave Meltzer.
Indeed. And speaking of preserve, this next match could have taken place in either 2001 or 2008, or other years, in fact. Triple H versus Jeff Hardy.
Duh.
In 1990 freaking five.
You messaged me before I watched this and said Hunter versus Jeff on this show. I'm like, oh, no way! That's exciting.
It's the guy who runs NXT versus the guy who should be NXT champion right now.
The linear NXT champion in Jeff Hardy, who is currently off the event circuit, tested positive for COVID over the weekend. Huh? So no Jeff for a little while.
I'm sorry, man. Let me cut you off there, but
that's all right.
But so by the time the show comes out, then Karrion Kross will have had to do something else on a roll.
He'll have to lose to another person.
Yeah, who's in catering? See, Otis is SmackDown.
Cedric,
he's on a roll anymore. Cedric, I guess it could be Cedric.
Everybody just beats Karrion Kross for the next 6 months. Why not?
Yeah, he could join Bear Country in AEW and become Cross the Bear.
He could join the Body Donners. He could be Skip, and he could be Chip on his shoulder.
So it's Triple H versus Jeff Hardy, and I'm pretty sure this is the only Triple H Jeff Hardy match in which Vince McMahon has plugged stop or my mom will shoot.
You'd think so.
But watching No Mercy 2008, it turns out
they were promoting WWE Stop or My Mom Will Shoot next month.
Stop or My Mom Will Shoot Hard on the following.
Stop or My Mom Will Work Herself into a Shoot.
My mom shoots on, see, shuffleboard. inconsistent bus schedules. Sewing circles and so forth.
Oh no! It's the movie whereby a wrestler is in the back of the car telling real stories about the wrestling world, and if he stops telling those stories, then his friend's parent will pull over, and the film is called "Shoot or My Mom Will Stop." I've got a sweat on coming up with that.
You look so proud of yourself.
I'm very proud of myself.
As long as you're happy, that's all that matters. Woo!
It's got hot in here all of a sudden.
You got it out. It's okay.
I'm glad I got my second COVID vaccine. I think that might be a side effect of that, or it could just be that was a very hot take.
So we get some good wrestling here.
Best
wrestling on the show so far.
It's a great match. This
good short match here. Jeff gets a good arm drag. The first good one of the show.
Someone had to eventually get a good arm drag in.
A nice little back and forth here. Jeff hits a Judas effect. And then he goes in 1995 for Whisper in the Wind, but misses. And the crowd oohed at that. Like, what the hell is he trying to do? He did the step up and flipped over and called nothing. We get an AOL plug during this match, which is appropriate given both men's ages today. Hunter takes his customary bow, but not facing the hard camera. Oh, Hunter, they penalize you for that.
Oh, he's in trouble now.
Pedigree finishes. We learn it's going to be Hunter versus Bob Holly at SummerSlam in the vaunted Holly Hunter match. Winner gets a piano.
Isn't it funny how we're getting Triple H versus Jeff Hardy to build up to Triple H versus Bob Holly? Universe seems crooked.
It's a bit askew.
Vince McMahon, during this match, plugging America Online, quote, "If you have a computer, you can call that number on the screen and be online." He then announces that next week he will be doing an AOL chat. Which I have the transcript of.
Have you read any of it?
I've read all of it several times.
Isn't it amazing?
It's the best. I can't wait to share it with you.
We're going to act out during SummerSlam during Taker versus Kama.
We are indeed. We've got it. You are going to hear the AOL chat of Vince versus the Universe.
A dramatic reading.
Can't wait. Very excited. Also, I've put here really lovely, neat pedigree for the finish.
Yes, Hunter delivers it well, and Jeff Hardy, well, he can bump.
Do you know, Justin Henry, Wrestling Almanac, the next time Triple H and Jeff Hardy go one-on-one?
Will it be the Intercontinental title match in 2001?
It is indeed, mate. April the 10th on SmackDown. That's the one.
Try to explain that to someone in 95. That's how the future would go.
No, the thing is, right, you explain that and they go, oh, wow, Triple H just stays in the Intercontinental division. Fair play to Jeff Hardy for climbing up there, though.
Get the SummerSlam insider. Todd wearing another suit. Apparently it's mandatory now.
He's changed.
Diesel versus Mabel, Shawn versus Razor, Brett versus Yankum. Todd tells us that Yankum is preparing his Novocaine. Why? Doesn't that stave off pain?
Yeah, why would he be preparing it?
It'd be no Novocaine. He just put the drill right in his friggin' mouth and just...
Unless he's going to give himself Novocaine to stop himself being hurt during the match.
What is he, Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet? He carries around like a...
Just... constantly popping himself with Novocaine.
Brett looks up for mercy. Don't fucking look at me. Actually, I'd watch that match.
I would as well, actually.
Kane in Blue Velvet.
John!
I want a Blue Velvet See No Evil hybrid movie now. From the insanity of David Lynch and the even deeper insanity of Vince McMahon. We bring to you. My God, that sounds awful and amazing at the same time.
It's a hot mess of an idea. That is, it's a hot mess. There was something that I spotted in the work chat to do with a Vince McMahon TV series.
Oh yes, they're doing a scripted series based on the steroid trial.
That's the one. I'm fascinated by this. Who would you get to play Vince McMahon?
My first choice would have been Ray Liotta.
Oh, nice.
Because he could play any insane character.
I like
and
that.
And he's kind of well built, so. Maybe Liev Schreiber.
Ooh, I was going to say Alec Baldwin, but I feel like I'm in the wrong ballpark.
Alec Baldwin could be, but he's... I just don't really care for Alec Baldwin. Comes off a little phony.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
So I don't really think anyone comes to those rules. I mean, age isn't an issue. I mean, they had De Niro playing, you know, young Frank Sheeran in The Irishman, and playing old, thanks to CGI.
That's so funny when they do that, when they get an old actor and get him playing the young one. It's very strange. Yeah. Very
I'm watching young Pesci and young De Niro talking in a movie in 2019.
Makes me uneasy.
If you've never seen The Irishman, it's worth 3.5 hours of your time just to see Ray Romano play a slimy lawyer.
I think we mentioned The Irishman, I think, once a month, I think, because it's a
great movie.
No, I agree. I've not seen it yet. I feel like if I don't get around to seeing it by Christmas, we'll do it as a watch-along presentation for
3.5 hours of it. I'm down.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. I'll get the Novocaine in.
I'll do any Scorsese movie. I don't care.
Nice. Cultaholic classic Scorsese review.
Watch Casino. I'll say every line in sync with the movie.
Oh, that would be fun.
I've only seen it 600,000
times.
It's
like a table reading of Casino.
Cheater's justice. Anyway. So, Brett versus Novocaine Riddle Yankum. Blaze versus Bertha Faye for the women's title. We get footage of a 4-month-old attack to build this matchup. See, you don't need to do it every week. You just do it once in a while.
I mean, there's, you know, keeping something simmering, and then there's turning the hob off completely, and then trying to reheat it in the microwave.
This is the baloney behind the radiator match. It might be edible. Let's find out.
Just give it a sniff. Oh, yeah, it smells all right. There's a green bit on the end. I'll just cut that off.
Nothing changed color, so I assumed it was fine.
I said, look, just check on me in 12 hours.
You're on the floor. Blah, 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 blah. Just speaking in tongues.
I suddenly need to go to the toilet, then something's gone terribly wrong.
I want to be alone with the sandwich. You're going to eat it, aren't you? Yes.
That sandwich is the Alundra Blaze Birth of Faith.
It didn't have mushrooms on it when it started, but now it does. Taker versus Kama casket match. Harwich versus Skip. Harwich has a pocket protector and nerdy glasses in his photo. Yes.
I love him. I love him so much.
His gimmick is that he works for NASA. which is where Bob Holly's spaceman was going to come from.
Oh, he was going to be a spaceman, wasn't he?
Eventually, in 2006. It's a shame that never came to pass. Damn it all. We learned that Harwood survived a 10-minute challenge this weekend where Skip couldn't beat him in 10 minutes. And then Todd tells us, can you believe it? Harwood is on a pay-per-view. Well, yeah, because the roster's so thin. It might have to turn enhancement talent into regular wrestlers.
What a weird thing to
Barry
say.
Harwood, mind you.
I know, but what a weird thing to say, though. To be like, I can't believe Harwitz is on pay-per-view. You're going to pay to watch this guy.
What's next? Reno Riggins, Brooklyn Brawler? Well, it depends how many more cuts there are in the next few months.
The train gang?
One can only hope.
One can only hope the train gang gets there.
You're thin on teams.
I'm livid. You're thin on strong teams. You've got a tag team. Like, you've got an oven-ready tag team there. You're choosing just to give them the one run out and then let them go.
Yeah. They ran the train once and then never again.
The line is closed.
We got Kid versus Hakushi in attempt to add a second great match to this show, which I approve of. Mm-hmm. No mentions of Guns versus Blues or Triple H versus Holly, so I can only assume that this was recorded over the weekend and they added those two matches like maybe the day of or something.
Yeah, very late into the proceedings.
No tag title match on the show. No Owen and Yoko.
Yeah, I thought they might have got given them a little run out.
Well, I think they're supposed to face the Allied Powers originally. But now it's supposed to be where something on next week's show happens that was supposed to happen at SummerSlam, which we'll get to that. But there was a story at this time that morale was down because payoffs were down. So the Guns versus Blue Twins match was added to the show because they're working so hard on house shows and they wanted to reward that to kind of boost some mid-cards and give them a big pay-per-view payoff.
I thought you were joking earlier when you said that.
No. They're apparently having solid or fun matches on house shows and decided to reward that. So,
oh, wow.
Like, well, someone from the mid-card's getting a boost here.
Oh, blimey.
So, I can see the logic of what they did, but it didn't really help the show much.
No.
We get the plug for the WrestleMania special, the first ever, in fact. We get a little LT and Bigelow football helmet, and they collide. That was kind of a nice touch.
I like that. That's nice. It's cute.
Check your local listings. It was 10 o'clock on a Saturday in September on Fox. Which Vince thought was going to leverage their way back into having Saturday's main event again, but no.
Was that what it was? Was like a little as a way of making a little bit of leeway with the pay-per-view company by just sort of dusting off WrestleMania 11 and going, give that another run out.
Yeah, just a little something.
Give us some Saturday night main events, you coward.
They would revisit it about 15 years later with NBC specials on Saturday, like then, you know, WrestleMania the special.
Yeah, and you know what? That worked out quite well because now the WWE Network lives on Peacock. So that obviously had a strong effect on them.
When the matches actually show up.
Yeah, when the darn thing actually works.
When they're unencumbered by technical issues.
Shocking.
Henry Godwin versus their old friend Ross Greenberg. A battle of a wrestler with my... with my last name and a wrestler with my middle name.
It's like they knew you were watching.
Mm-hmm. Which way Justin Hawk Bradshaw came in later.
So this is deliberately short for the aforementioned reason that Godwin is suffered a sprained ankle 2 days mm-hmm. before this.
Well, I thought they were just squashing Greenberg because they're trying to build Carry On Hog.
I mean, there's a bit of that too, but I have a feeling it might have been a bit more competitive had Hog been in, haven't had Hog had two working wheels.
Fall and hay. There were two breaks between Henry Godwin's entrance starting and the match beginning. This is an oddly structured show. Slop drop finishes under a minute. God bless the one cheering WAAF fan in the front row who's trying to make fetch happen.
I'm still thinking of Fallen Hay.
Cannot
endure the end.
Fallen Hay. Simon says Scarlet be Scarlet O'Hara because you got to go to the south.
Hey! John, Carrion Hog.
Greenberg gets slapped after the match. Vince thinks it's funny now because now he's a baby face. I see the mercy in it now.
Now you're a good guy. This is hilarious.
Nitro can't come fast enough.
About 4 weeks to go, fella.
Vince's been getting away with this for too long. It's time to put a stop to it. Get another Yankum vignette. Why do people go to him if he's such a sadist?
Yeah, I would just change dentists.
I know.
That's what I do. I go to a different dentist.
I mean, there's got to be more than one. You just go on Yelp, see who has good reviews. Woman of the chair complains of pain. So Yanka takes the Novocaine needle and just jams it right in her mouth. There's a cutaway here.
Yeah, they cut away, which is like it must have been bad if they cut away.
Either it looked bad or they're just trying to add a little bit of drama to it, but it actually did make it more disturbing. It's probably the most disturbing Yankum vignette yet.
Yeah, this feels like the most sinister one they've done, without a doubt. Mm-hmm.
The Yankum is just a goddamn psychopath.
He's good though, isn't he? I'm quite liking him.
Well, speaking of things that psychopaths do, before we get to Sean and Lawler, we have to discuss the best bit of promoting a product that perhaps this company has ever done. And I can make fun of this because I had some of these.
Oh, so did I, mate. It's fine.
Barry the Dud is backstage.
Barry the Dud. Poor guy.
Where he finds the 1-2-3 kid and Savio Vega playing what appears to be Pogs, but are actually Mat Caps.
Because Pog is a trademarked name, so they can't call them Pogs. Yes, it is.
Now, for you youngins out there who have no idea what in the hell we're talking about, because this was a very short-lived fad, Pogs was this game where you took these little cardboard milk caps, they called them. It would usually have a depiction of like a logo or something from TV shows, sports, movies, whatever you liked, cartoons. You would stack them up on this little board, and you would take this little thing called a slammer, this little hardened either plastic or metal sort of disc, and you slam it down on the pile, see how many you could flip over. Once you flip it over, you kept. You kept going until the whole pile was done. Whoever had the most won. It was marbles, but more complex.
That's it. And this was a fad worldwide. Everybody was playing different versions of these at this time. So
in 1995, yes. 96, hell no.
Oh no, it dropped off the face of the earth in 96. But it was just fun to watch the WWF guys so invested. It felt like they were. Who was it backstage? Was it Savio Vega
and Kid
and 1-2-3 Kid, and it was like they nicked Barry Dudinsky's. Madcaps, and he was like, guys, I need them to take to the front, and they're like, hey, shut up, dud, we're playing with them.
We'll give them back when we're done.
You put a DQ in a freaking Madcaps match.
I'm Razor's ride to the hotel. I gotta kill time while he before he has his match. So
did you have WWF Madcaps?
I bought some at the Ocean City, New Jersey boardwalk in the summer of 95.
I like how you know specifically where you got them from.
I remember that. I remember that night because I was actually excited to have them. I was 11 and hadn't experienced the internet yet. So Barry Dudinsky says what may be the most asinine thing that I've ever heard on any wrestling broadcast, and that covers a lot of ground.
Okay.
This is what he said verbatim. The only thing hotter than the mat caps themselves is an uncut sheet of mat caps. Tom is crying right now.
You know what's better than mat caps? When they're still on the sheets. Oh, do you know what? I'm not even mad at the dud. Like, the guy's there to sell. He's there to sell shit. And he's doing his best with the tools he's given.
If Barry Dudinsky were a character on Sesame Street, the kids would beat him up.
Oh, he'd get battered. He'd get battered.
He'd get thrown in the Oscar's trash can and then Oscar would finish him off.
He'd just get battered. Bless him. Bless him. Bless the dud. He's doing everything he can.
If Brian Alvarez reviewed these shows, the word geek would be used at least 20 times per Barry segment.
Oh, God. Poor Barry.
Is he still Could he look like any bigger of a geek?
Is he still with us, Dudinsky?
Yeah, he actually became a poker player, I believe.
Oh, you got the dud! Doing that creepy long smile. They do in the YouTube videos. Every time he gets it hard, he gets
I was doing it for you.
Thanks, mate. That's the one. That's the one.
I know. I watched him 7 million times. I know how it's done. Stand up for yourself, Poindexter. So, as Kid and Savio are slamming these mat caps, not at all pogs. You get the neoprene basic that they play on. Oh, this is like. It's like getting 2 chihuahuas for the price of one. But you also get a 3-month magazine subscription.
What a treat. I mean, the magazine's quite good. The magazine is good at this point.
I mean, as a kid, I'd have been happy having all this stuff. I'm not going to lie. I was that age. But look back at it now. It's just like, kind of didn't take much to entertain us.
We were simple creatures back then, mate. In the 90s. Like, life was simple.
You kids and your Nintendo Switches.
Your Switches and your Twitters and your and your Candy Crushes.
And your Ticker Talkers.
You come over here with your goddamn Ticker Talkers.
And your Farmvilles.
Coming over here with the goddamn Bebos and your and your Froggers.
Hey, that was our thing.
Coming over here with your goddamn Final Fantasy VIII.
Even your Millipedes.
Coming over here with your goddamn Pikmin.
All right, Dave, video games cost a quarter to play. And if you lost, you had to put another quarter in.
As was the style at the time.
So I put an onion in the machine. Hang on. Tom may be in this place for 5 minutes while you last the thought about putting an onion into an arcade game. Great, you've ruined Gattaca. Thanks.
Just onions appearing in Gallagher. What's going on? I didn't think that would happen.
Oh. Shawn Michaels versus Jerry Lawler in our main event. Main event title match.
Yeah.
And Doc's applying Stridex, then dances to Shawn's theme.
Because he's apparently a teenage girl.
I'm starting to wonder if Doc Henderson's commentary was an influence on Pat McAfee in any way.
I think it might have been.
Because he's into everything.
He is, isn't he? He's a big purveyor of all things.
Like, you can't fire me if I'm trying.
You can't fire me if I'm trying. Oh, bless Pat. I like Pat.
Vince gushes over Shawn in a way that only Vince can. Match begins. Lawler throws punches, which are always welcome because Lawler has the best punches in wrestling. As expected, Shawn clowns him for a bit. This kind of feels like a house show match. Mm. Just Shawn having fun, Lawler playing the fool. It's all good. And then we get an amazing moment. Not that this match wasn't solid, but this moment is truly amazing. Lawler goes for his pile driver. And Shawn has a counter to it that I've never really seen before. Usually you just backdrop your way out, or you push off the thighs in order to escape the clutches. Shawn goes up for the pile driver. On the way down, he puts his hand down and does like a handstand so that his head doesn't hit. Then he lands on his feet and attacks.
How has no one done that since?
Especially with so many agile wrestlers like Ricochet Phoenix. It looks, it's probably more complex than it looks, but I'll bet so many guys could do that with ease.
Yeah. That looks so good. Shawn's, he's the guy, isn't he, at this point.
He's one of the best in-ring wrestlers ever.
Just the guy.
He's got a complex legacy, but his in-ring was always top notch. So while all the fun's going on, here comes Sid. Comes out, grabs the Intercontinental belt. Looks at him and thinks, God, one day there's going to be 7 straight WrestleManias where this isn't even defended.
that's what he thought.
Lawler gets a DD Boy Smith delayed suplex at one point, which surprised the hell out of me. Because Lawler's not really a moves guy. He's just a work on the, just work the crowd kind of guy.
Maybe he felt like Shawn Michaels was one of those guys he could bust a move out with.
Perhaps gets a DDT at one point. Then Lawler goes for a top rope splash and misses. Jerry Lawler, at this point, age 45, I believe, went for a superfly goddamn splash.
He surprised me in this one. Like, he was giving it some socks against Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, Lawler is inspired. Shawn fires up. He hits as usual. Gets sweet sheet music, in which Lawler flies back about 10 feet off of it. Not a simple fall down stuff, but I mean, like he'd been just punched like a karate movie, and then when the kill goes, flies backwards in slow motion. It was great. But then Sid attacks for the DQ.
Now, there was a short bit with Jerry Lawler where he leans back for a punch and goes, hey, how about this for a whopper? That was a nice little line from Lawler in that match that I wanted to.
Lawler was always good at just injecting that sort of stuff in a match.
He was very, very good.
It's why to this day he can have a match age 70 and it's probably still enjoyable. Because he just knows all the little tricks. So Sid's kicking Shawn's ass for a bit, choke slams him. He's going for the power bomb. Out comes Razor to make the save. But then Razor stops Shawn from super kicking Sid because he wants Sid himself. He goes for the edge on Sid, but then Lawler saves Sid. There's some weird unions going on here.
How amazing was it to see Razor Ramon pick up Sid for the Razor's Edge? That looks so good.
Razor's a strong boy.
Yeah, big strong boy.
Yes, he's Sid cooperated, obviously, but Razor still, he had to irk him up and get him into that position.
He had to. He really had to.
So we get some Razor Shawn tension over the belt. They're doing the sort of half-ass tug of war, which is still better than the Brock Roman one. Yeah. Razor pulls the belt away. A little bit of pantomime between friendly rivals. Razor goes to hand it back, but then drops it in the sort of condescending fashion, like, you pick it up. Diesel runs in to play Peacemaker, not the John Cena Peacemaker. Razor and Shawn have more friction. Show, and that's your show.
You know what? Not a bad episode of Raw.
No, this was mostly fun.
There was lots to be cheerful about in here. Lots to be cheerful about. I thought Wayland Mercy wiping out Doink the Clown was good times. Gold Dust is going to change the game. We don't quite know it yet. And like you said, Hunter's Helsley, Jeff Hardy, match of the night. Mm-hmm. If there is a match of the night, it's that one. And Michaels and Lawler give us a decent little house show-esque main event.
Yeah, this was definitely... It fed off the energy of a live Massachusetts crowd. Anything with Hogg was death.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he was there as well.
No offense to him. It's not his fault. It's just the way it's all set up. It's very hackneyed mid-90s WWF. But yeah, like a promising show heading towards SummerSlam.
How far are we from SummerSlam now?
We have one more Raw and then it's SummerSlam.
One more Raw next week. The Raw go home for SummerSlam is next week. And we'll talk a little bit about the watch along for SummerSlam and next week. And until we are next together, he is at JRH Writing on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Give us more of the Train Gang, you cowards. Love you. Bye. Train.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.